Welcome to Science Conversations. I'm Casey Verkerker. Can new organisms form from random mutations? Joining me to discuss part three of this topic is Dr. John Ashton. Welcome once again to the program, John.
Hello, Casey.
Dr. John Ashton has written a book entitled Evolution Impossible, and we have been going through this book, and in this part we are looking at some aspects of chapter four. So, John, we've been talking about how we need to have new DNA code produced in order for Darwin's theory to be in any way really accurate for the long ages and the development of new species over that time, right? So when we talk about new genetic information, what amount of new genetic information are we talking about? How much of that would we need to explain all of the diversity of species that we see around us today?
Right. Yes, well, I think this is a question that many people really don't understand, including much of academia too. I think perhaps they haven't given a lot of thought to it because intuitively, it just from the size of the amount of information that is in living organisms is enormous. Mm. For a start, organisms, we're aware of many of our external body parts, arms, legs, our head and eyes and mouth and so forth. But within this, we have biochemical systems as well, where we have, all sorts of blood regulators and all this sort of thing, hormones and so forth. And all these chemicals all are produced with very complex chemical reactions within the body itself, and there are control mechanisms for those sort of things as well. Not to mention the way that all these structures, all these reactions that are occurring are encoded for in what we call the genetic code or the DNA of each organism. And this is a code that's written in a language using just four letters or four chemicals, actually. These are chemical bases that form the code, and we give them the characteristic letters A, C, T, and G. So this is a language that's written in just four letters. English, for example, has 26 letters. We just four letters in this code. And this code then enables the proteins and all the components that make up all the parts of us to be assembled. Mm. Now, these codes are enormous. So if we look at, say, for example, a simple bacteria like E. coli, which has been studied extensively, it's a very simple living organism. It doesn't have a nucleus. It has very, very simple structure. Its code consists of about 4.5 million base pairs. Mm. So there's 4.5 million letters in that code.
Hmm.
So if we get to, if we then go to an organism that has a nucleus, like a yeast, we're jumping up to about 12 million letters in its code.
Wow. About three times as much, just like that.
Wow, yes. A big jump up to another 7.5 million pieces of code would have to form if a bacteria just evolved a nucleus and changed into something like a yeast. Mm. Also, we need to understand that yeast has in it more letters that are in the entire works of Shakespeare.
Hmm.
More letters in the code than in the entire works of Shakespeare. Now, that we're all really just up to a yeast. Now, if we go to a simple organism like a roundworm, a nematode that's studied in the laboratory, they're about 5 millimetres long, they have a mouth, they have an anus, they have a digestive system, a reproductive system. We've jumped up now to 97 million letters in the code. And whereas the yeast had about 6,000 genes in its code, we now got about 19,000 genes in the little roundworm. So a huge increase in the number of genes. There are another 13,000 genes have formed. And these genes are made up of tens of thousands of pieces of code. They're very big now, codes in these genes.
And they're coding for specific functions and things like
that. That's right, within that organism. Once we get up to things like a mammal, like a mouse, 2.5 billion genes.
Billions now.
billion letters in its code.
Skip the millions. We just went to billions.
Yeah, so we're up to, and then of course we have some of the plants have even more complex letters, a greater number of letters, more complex genomes in their genetics. And so this is a huge amount of genetic code that all has to form by random mutations.
Mm.
Now, for example, scientists just recently from RMIT University, where I'm an adjunct professor down there as well, and they've published a calculation with regard to if you took all the monkeys in the world, all the chimps, I think it might have been chimpanzees in the world, typing, randomly pressing on typewriters, how long would it take them to type out the works of Shakespeare? And they calculated that it would be longer than the age of the universe we know it. So that they calculate to be. In other words, there isn't enough time in the so-called age of 13.8 billion years. And yet this would not have the complexity, for example, of a yeast cell. And yet people assume that random blind mutations of chemical reactions that don't actually occur naturally in nature. So, for example, scientists such as James Tour have shown that the reactions required to produce the genetic code don't occur in a natural environment where they're exposed to all sorts of other chemicals and UV radiation and so forth, don't occur anyway. And even if these molecules did assemble, the chances of them forming a meaningful code are so astronomical as to not likely to occur. But the other thing is, when we look at the number of species that have existed in the world, so we know there's about 2 million species, known species reported in the literature at the moment. And we believe that this only represents 1 or 2% of the total number of species that have existed, because when we look at the fossil record, there are huge numbers of species that are now extinct. And it's quite reported and regularly reported that the estimates are now that 98 to 99% of species that have existed are now extinct.
Wow, that's a huge
So if we look, that in the past we've got something like 100 million at least species have existed on this earth. And if we take an average code for each species, just, it's 10 to the power 8, 100 million. And if we take the number of codes, say, similar to a roundworm, around 100 million letters, that's another 10 to the 8. So we've got 10 to the 16. This is extremely conservative because we know, as we know, mammals and plants, many of them have a billion and billions of letters, much more. We're up to 10 to the 16. If we look at the number of letters in Shakespeare's entire work, we're only looking at something like 10 to the 7. So, 7 from 16 leaves us with, 10 to the 7, 10 to the 9 rather, which is a billion. So essentially the genetic information that people, evolutionists claim has arisen by chance is equivalent to as if Shakespeare had written a billion of his entire works, as all different works.
Wow.
So the amount of literature contained in a billion equivalent of Shakespeare's entire works is the amount of information that evolutionists have to claim has arisen by chance. And we don't have to be a rocket scientist, a statistician, mathematician to work out and to know that's absolutely impossible to occur by blind random mutations. And of course, according to evolutionary theory, most of this has occurred over the past 600 million years. And we should be observing scientifically evolution occurring. Mm. And yet we've got classic examples of where we've deliberately bred, for example, bacteria trying to observe evolution, and we can't see new meaningful code forming. We have powerful evidence before us that evolution has never happened. It's absolutely impossible to happen to produce the new code. We have overwhelming evidence that life on Earth must have been created, supernaturally created, by a super intelligence intelligence.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, to think even for someone or like even an individual to write code for all of that is beyond the human capacity for everything we see around us. And so you just think, well, how could that have happened without some super mind?
Yes, and you've raised a very good point there. With all our knowledge of genetics and the genetic code, scientists can't write code for a new type of organism that works.
No.
We can adapt existing codes, and people have tried to and do that and made some success. But like I said before, we can't write new code for a pig to now have wings.
Yes.
And insert the codes into some DNA and grow it. We don't know what is going to work. And again, the reason is that the codes themselves are so complex.
Yes.
In that the codes are not only just describing the structure of an organism as such, but they are also encoding a whole lot of regulatory mechanisms that switch on and off under certain conditions, mechanisms that change the meaning of code depending on circumstances and so forth, which is absolutely fascinating. And, of course, this is part of what was the so-called junk DNA that people thought were just useless leftovers. We now find are codes within codes that do absolutely amazing things.
Yeah.
And it's beyond. We see when we look at the way chemical reactions work, when we look at statistics, it's absolutely impossible for evolution to have occurred. Mm. And to me, it is just so morally wrong that we're not pointing this out to young people in our schools. That sure, Darwin's theory was a beaut theory of its time. It appeared to come up with a mechanical explanation for how life could come about in a mechanical worldview that was developing at that time. But we now know from our science that it is absolutely impossible for Darwin's theory to be responsible for life on Earth.
Mm. Yeah, well, in Darwin's day, they didn't even understand about genetics and DNA wasn't discovered and all of this kind of thing. So there's been huge advancement in knowledge of how organisms work in their fundamental way and the levels are right down in the chemical structures and everything. So I guess, the whole thing about science is to be progressive and move with the understanding. So we can't ignore the kind of things that you have mentioned. It would unscientific to do
that's
that.
That's right. And the scientists are speaking out, but this information isn't getting into our textbooks and it's not getting out to the students that we have overwhelming evidence that life was created supernaturally by a super intelligent designer that we call God.
Very, very compelling. Thank you so much for sharing on this topic. And next time, we're going to examine the question, are fossils evidence for evolution? So be sure to join us.